Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 26th, May 2020, Tuesday class. It's still on Hari Raya holiday, but it's okay because tomorrow most people will go back to their working life, career. So we will still have our class, and it seems less people log in. Maybe still early, we have 8 of us only. The rest will come in later. Okay, so we will, as usual, prepare for puja, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Okay. Namo Bhinsu Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhinsu Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhinsu Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guansuying Pusa. Namo Guansuying Pusa. Namo Guansuying Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swagato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Suramiraya Majapamadatana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect Triple Gem Buddhang Pujami. Damang Pujaimi. Sanghang Pujaimi. Okay. You all can be seated. Then we will off the light, for our half an hour of silent awareness meditation. So the instruction is as usual. You need to train your mind, you train. You can use the mind sweeping method combined with the metta to decondition your heedless thinking. Then those who still need the object of meditation to stabilize your sati, use it. Then for those who already have developed the daily mindfulness, the spiritual faculties, you can just straight away meditate. You will go into the meditative state straight away. And for those who may be not so stable, you want to give it a try, you can. Remember the four support, especially the first three. You just relax body and mind completely. And make yourself at ease, like you got no more problem. Body and life completely relaxed, mind also silent, relaxed. Then maintain that awareness, which is the silent mind without thought, just aware. Whatever happened, aware, finish. Aware, finish. Don't try to know, just aware. Continuously maintain the awareness. Then find out what happened. The mind will slow down on its own. If your spiritual faculty is already developed, your daily mindfulness, you have done it well, you will settle down very fast. And within less than a minute or two, you are in the meditative state straight away. Then you can anchor your mind to your heart base if you can. Or feel around the heart area. Then let the silent mind develop. Let it stabilize. Then it will detect whatever vibration or heartbeat around there. Then stay with it. Just be with it. Just the awareness and the vibration move as one. The heartbeat will be very prominent. Initially, it's like pounding very long. But never mind. You just relax into it. Let it be. Then it will slow down, slow down, slow down. Until your mind becomes very quiet and still. When it's without thought, the original mind, the true mind, that meditative state, they will surface. Then you will understand what that nature is. That is your self nature, your meditative mind, your true mind, the silent mind that can understand many things. So stay there, be with it, and observe silently. Then maintain the awareness for as long as you can. Whatever tactile consciousness that arise, just aware. Then find out. Then whatever hearing consciousness that arises, the same, just let it arise, let it be. Then maintain awareness to observe, to understand. The understanding of it will develop the awakening and the wisdom. So you have to stabilize that sati or mindfulness. Then be very familiar with what that true mind is. When you are very familiar and very clear about the true mind, then you will understand the movement of the mundane mind that arises from there. Then you can start to understand the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teaches and all those things. Okay, so with that, we will start our meditation. We will off the light. I will set the alarm. Then when half an hour is up, it will ring. Then I will ring the bell 3 times. After hearing the bell, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Okay. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness and mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then stabilize your sati until the mind enters sati. So when mind enters sati, you will know, the form of mind will know, you become very different. You will experience the mind that is in sati very, very differently. Because when it happens, everything you do, you are in sati. Every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought process, they are all in sati. That's why it becomes so different. That is like you are with the moment all the time. Then as you come out of the meditation also, you will experience like everything is different now. Like the mind has become very stable. The mindfulness and your activity of your kaya, they move as one. Then all your movement are like magnified. Then it's like the awareness is automatic. It's like part of you. The body and mind, they move as one. So it will happen, and when it happens, you will have a lot of joy. Sometimes for those who do the bowing or the walking or what, then as you do, when your sati become very stable, it will happen, you will experience it. Like you realize all of a sudden your activity and movement is one. But for those who experience that during the walking or the bowing or what, initially, normally, it's not that stable yet, because that one is just that moment, the mind enters sati. Then you will be like suddenly curious or excited. But after that, you try to maintain, you can't. That's why I say, don't try to know, just do. Do until that thing become very stable. Then lie down more, or form a posture, sit more, until the mind become very, very stable, the sati, the silence, the tranquility. You will realize paucity. Paucity is actually the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, that silent mind, your true mind. So that stage, when you realize paucity, your mind has begin to enter sati. That's why when paucity become very stable, when you are always in that state most of the time, then your mind would have entered sati. Then your sensitivity or mindfulness become different. Your mindfulness might become very refined, much, much more refined. Then during that time, when you sit or you lie down or when you meditate in the form of meditation, like all the subtle movement, your subtle breathing, your subtle awareness, mindfulness, even your object of meditation, the very quiet one, suddenly you can feel them again. You become sensitive to them again because your mindfulness has become more refined. Then during that time, many things happen. You will understand many things. You will be able to be aware of many things that you never able to be aware before. Then everything like slow down. But you are actually in the normal pace of your life. It's only your mind has stopped thinking. That's why you can be in the moment with your mindfulness and awareness. It's as if like everything become very clear to you. You have to go through all this, experience all this. Then only your daily mindfulness can stabilize. Then always remember, have a good religious routine to do it, so that you are throughout the day training your mind to develop this meditative state. This is the real training. If you can do that, you will become heedful very fast. Then you will understand the Dhamma very fast, very differently. Then the wisdom that arise will awaken you. And it will give you a lot of understanding, leading to a very stable meditative mind that is constantly aware, ever mindful throughout the day. When you are able to be in that state, then you can use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, accumulating into heedfulness or Appamada. Okay, now we will turn to the chanting book, page 6. We will do the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which is heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkhadang. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Vijacarana sampano sugato lokavido anutaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko ehi paseko opanaiko acyatang veditabo vinohiti. Supatipano bhagavato saukasango Ujupatipano bhagavato saukasango. Nyayapatipano bhagavato saukasango. Samichipatipano bhagavato saukasango. यादिदां चतारी पुरिस युगानि अत्त पुरिस पुगला एसा भगवतो साक संगो आहुनेयो पाहुनेयो दाकेनेयो अंजलि करनेयो अनुतरं पुण्यं केतं लोकसाति साधु साधु साधु. Okay, let us continue from where we stopped. We are at page 40 of the Heart Sutta, second edition book. Lesson 15. Yeah. Okay. So we will start from 1.1. Mind is the forerunner of all things. This one is a very important, essential Dhamma. If you understand this, you will understand that you will have two minds. Here, the Buddha is referring to your mundane mind. That's why he said our mind, this mundane mind, or conditioned arising mind, dependent originating mind, is the forerunner of all things. When this mind arises, all things arise. But this is the knowing element. This is the one that can really give rise to consciousness, can make you conscious of things, can make you aware of things, can make you perceive things and all those things. So all this will arise the moment that mind arises. So I will read to the teaching of the Buddha to you, then you will understand. According to the Buddha, our mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind make a day. Hence, through mental consciousness, we can perceive the phenomenal world of consciousness. All of physical, mental, and nature's phenomena within life and existence, you will have the ability to perceive them, to experience them. Then there is a definition which is very important. You must remember this definition. What is a phenomenon? So the definition of a phenomenon is very important. According to Oxford Dictionary, you check, you can find them. Anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. And this is a very good definition. This is really the spiritual understanding of mind. That's why anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So this understanding is very important. When mind arises, perception arises, well, our mind has this aggregate of sanya, which has the ability to perceive. And perception is a very important aggregate of mind, because this is the one that allow you to perceive the world of form, the world of phenomena. And within our existential world, there are three basic phenomena. Physical means all our physical activity and movement, whatever that your mind can perceive is a physical phenomena. Then all of your mental movement activity, these are mind phenomena. That's why we call it mental phenomena. Whatever that your mind can perceive is movement, is activity, or anything that the mind can do. That's why all of sankhara is mental phenomena. Then there is another aspect of phenomena within nature. Everything that the mind can perceive within nature, we call it nature's phenomena. That's why within your field of vision, seeing consciousness, you can perceive whatever within that seeing consciousness. We call it the sense data, color, shape, and form. Then within the seeing consciousness, we can also perceive many other things. So perception is the one that brings the external form into our mind, the external phenomenal into our mind. Like whatever you come to perceive, all of the buildings, the automobiles, the trees, the plant, the whatever physical thing that you see outside. So this is within the field of seeing consciousness. Then you can also perceive through your hearing consciousness all of the sound, the music, the vibration, the nature's vibration and nature's breeze, movement, everything you can perceive them. Then through your smell, your taste, your tactile, you can also perceive things. That's why that one also phenomenal, tactile phenomenon, taste phenomenon, smell phenomenon. Then through your brain activity, you can become conscious of your mind activity. That's why mental consciousness can arise. So when mental consciousness can arise, you can perceive the mental form, the mental formation, the images and all those things. So all this is what that mind is capable. So understanding perception will allow you to understand phenomena. Yeah, anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So for easy understanding, we break up the phenomena into three basic phenomena that we can easily classify and understand. Physical phenomena, all of the physical activity that we do that the mind can perceive, like your posture, your form posture, your whatever physical phenomena that arise, bending, stretching, then even looking forward and all those things. So these are your physical activity and movement that you can perceive them. So this is a phenomenon. Then whatever that the mind can perceive is a mental phenomenon. Then whatever physical thing that exists within nature, that is nature's phenomena, like the weather, whatever that come to your sense, the consciousness that enable you to perceive them. That's how you know the world. That's how you interact with the world, with humanity, with fellow beings and all those things. So everything happened through your senses. Then you realize without your sense basis, it cannot trigger off consciousness. You need to have a mind. Upon contact of mind with the sense basis and the sense data, then the respective sense door consciousness arise. So when it arise, the aggregate of perception can perceive whatever that arise. That's why all these are like heap aggregate. It can perceive moment to moment. It can feel moment to moment. But it cannot simultaneously do all these things. It's always one at a time. One at a time. That's why when you are thinking, you are no longer aware. You are lost in thought. That is the aggregate that arises. So when you are silent, whatever arises, whether feeling, perception, or activity of mind or consciousness, when they arise, you can be aware. Yet the awareness is capable of understanding and seeing all these things. But the aggregate of mind cannot see awareness. It's of lower intelligence. And from awareness, the mundane mind arise. The other aggregates of mind arise. That's the reason why the awareness or the consciousness nature is the one that is responsible for the arising of the mundane mind. So mundane mind, which is of lower intelligence, cannot see awareness, but awareness can see the mundane mind. So it's just like our world of form, our form world. If you look at our existential world of form, you look at all the external form, all this, they arise due to what? Due to mind. Without mind, which is energy, this form cannot arise. Form is trapped consciousness. Yeah. So if you look at nature, you look at our physical world, our civilization, everything that we come to perceive, the external form, like within your house, your office, your building, or even outside, the table, the chair, the computer, the microphone, the fan, the aircon, the building, the highway infrastructure, every of these, they arise through what? Through the human mind. Without the human mind, all this will not arise. So form is the manifestation of mind. Mind is responsible for it to arise. So when you understand that, then you know our mind has higher intelligence than form. That's the reason why our mundane mind, through consciousness, can see form, can perceive form. Because form is a product of thought, product of the mundane mind. So without mundane mind, without thought, without living being, without humanity, the physical world of form cannot arise. Even the planet, all those things cannot arise. The basis of creation is mental energy, mind, consciousness. Then later on, you will develop the understanding after you realize the cessation to understand what the source is. The realization of Nibbana, the unconditioned, will enable you to understand the source. Means you return to the unconditioned before everything arises, the source of all things. The scientists also have a term. They call this the there's a word for it. Let me try to recall. What is that word already? I always use that word. It's like the source of all things. I cannot remember. What is that really? No, it's like the origin, but they got everything returned to there. From there, it start on. Like the Big Bang. I just cannot remember the English word. Never mind. Later on, when I recall, I let you know. There is a word to describe it.
Is it nemesis?
No, not nemesis. It's a very powerful scientific word. From there, everything arises on. What they call that already? No, not that one. No, it's just one technical word. It's a physics, from physics on. Never mind. When I recall, I let you know. That word is actually very often used by physicists, scientists.
Infinity, Abratio?
No, not infinity. No. It's like one plus sign on. From there, everything start on. What is it really? Then we, yeah, forget about it first. We go into the teaching first. Okay, go back to just now that page. Later on, the word will come out. Okay, so definition of a phenomena. Anything perceivable by mind is a phenomena. Yeah. Then you have the next paragraph, contemplative wisdom. This is the second turning wisdom. Contemplative wisdom can arise when you silence your mind to reflect, contemplate and inquire into the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Be aware and mindful of all physical, mental and nature's phenomena within your daily life. To see clearly their moment of arising. This one very important. I read again. I read again. Be aware and mindful of all physical, mental and nature's phenomena within your daily life. To see clearly their moment of arising is sustained and passing away of all phenomena there and then. And to realize the penetrative wisdom born of bhavana or cultivation of the meditative discipline. So here I specifically state four foundations of mindfulness. Well, when you cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, it's always the third turning, bhavana, maya, panya. So it's always the silent mind that insight into phenomena that awaken through the direct seeing. So this is what penetrative wisdom is all about. The moment you are able to see this very clearly, it means your sati is already very stable. And the understanding also follow, the panya also follow. That's why there and then it will awaken, the insight will be there. Because when you are with the moment, at this moment of arising, sustainer, means that very flow of phenomena and the cessation, where everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena in a state of flux. So when condition arise, that phenomena arise. So its moment of arising, your mindfulness is with it. Then when condition continue to support it, the sustainer phase it will flow. Then after that, it will disappear, cease. Even like when you walk, walking, you realize your birth and death of the footstep. The moment it arises, that is the arising. Then that movement before it end is the sustainer phase. Then the moment your foot step down, it like cease. Or you say birth and death. Then the next footstep, born again, sustained, then it is. When you do your walking meditation, you will see all this. You will see all this. Then when your anapanasati become very stable, very strong, then you will see the birth and death of every moment of your breathing, the in and out breath. Then later on, you will see the changes within that breath, and everything is like very clear to you because of your sati, your mindfulness. Then you can also see the birth and death of feeling, your heartbeat, your pulse of life, all of vibration within your physical body. You can see them. That's why I say for those who see, they always see. This is where the three universal characteristics come in. The flow of phenomena and nature is arising, sustaining and passing away. It's like a flow. Then you will understand why is condition arising, cause of phenomena. Then everything become like very clear to you. So when you can have that type of stability, you will awaken. That's why you will insight into phenomena. You will awaken to the three universal characteristics. It will just arise, then it apply to all phenomena, not just that particular phenomena that awaken you. No. After that, you will understand. Everything is like that. The whole universe within the conditioned world is like that. That's why it's called a universal characteristic. Right. Then I move on to the next paragraph. Singularity? Singularity. Yes, my daughter remember now. Now the word come out, singularity. Yeah. From that singularity, that original thing, the source, then everything come out. You go and check. It's called the singularity. Yeah, thank you. My daughter suddenly remember. So singularity. Try to remember for me. Next time I share. Well, I cannot hold in memory unless there is condition for it to come out. So it's called a singularity. The scientists also know. That's why they came out with this theory of the Big Bang. He said from the singularity, the first moment of creation, from there everything starts. But it doesn't mean that there is the beginning of life, beginning of time. No. There is the beginning of that arising of that whole universe. Understand? From the Big Bang, the singularity, the expanding universe, they start. And they move on until now. So it seems, according to the scientists, there will be a four-phase cycle. Initially, it's the birth, Big Bang. Then the expanding universe, that is the growth phase. Then it will be slow, decaying phase. Then that one will lead to the contraction, slowing down. Then finally, the death. That's why the birth and death of the universe. So the Buddha call it Asankhaya Kalpas, or various section of duration, kalpas. So one Mahakalpa, it seems, is four Asankhaya Kalpas. So these four Asankhaya Kalpas, if I'm not wrong, they are the four stage cycle. That's why when this four stage finish complete, it is one Mahakalpa. And do you know how long is a Mahakalpa? According to Reverend Suwanu again, I think he must have read it from the Tipitaka or the Sutta, the text. It seems he gave an analogy. He said, if there is a mountain, 7 miles wide, 7 miles long, then 7 miles high, like a square mountain, very, very massive. Every 100 years, you use a wooden cloth or linen cloth. You just allow to wipe one time only. You have to wipe until the whole of that cube, no more. And that is one Mahakalpa. So you can imagine how long it takes. Every 100 year, wipe one time. Not every day, wipe one time. Every 100 years. So that is the extent of time duration. So one Mahakalpa is actually very, very long. Very, very long. But those who exist in the Arupa rhyme, Arupa rhyme, the formless rhyme, you look at their lifespan. The highest one, if I'm not wrong, is 84,000 kapas. So I don't know whether that kapa is Mahakalpa or what. Oh, that is really long. So this one is just extra information. You interested in the data, you can go and look it up, check it out, then you can understand on your own. In the early days, because we don't have the benefit of Google, internet, so I just listen to some of this talk by Reverend Suwanu. I like Suwanu because he summarized for me a lot of the Jataka story that I don't have to read. I listen to his sharing, then I get to know a lot of it. And he's very good at like explaining all this. He's like telling story about the Jataka story and the Buddha's teaching. That's why I like Chief Reverend talk and his sharing. They give me a lot of story about the Jataka story. That saved me a lot of time. Because I don't have to go and look for the English translation, the Tipitaka. You know how many volumes is a Tipitaka? And I don't like to waste time reading all these things. But if people tell me, then I develop the understanding. Then if I want to check, now very easy. I go to Google, I Google, the thing will come out. But you have to be careful about Google. Because what come out, you need to screen. Not everything is authentic. Because different commentaries explain it differently. Then sometimes they will give you a certain type of source that is not authentic to our Theravada tradition or Mahayana tradition. Sometimes it's mixed. Then there's a lot of distortion. So all this, you have to screen yourself, develop an understanding yourself. Okay, we continue. Once again, I must thank my daughter Sui. Singularity, yes. Means from that singularity, everything come to be. The Big Bang and all those things. With the silent mind in pure awareness, one can be aware of all the vibration and phenomena within one's form and mind. This one is very, very important, very beautiful. When your mindfulness has developed, stabilized, you can feel your own heartbeat. You can feel whatever vibration within your body and mind. You don't need a stethoscope. And you are very clear about your entire body and mind. Even when you taste something, which part of your brain activated, then can give you that type of sensation, you will know. Then many things, when you lie down to sleep, all of your bodily contact or whatever, the vibration there, you can be mindful of it, you can be aware of it. Then even your whatever vibration in other area, the moment you recite your mind awareness, they're silent, you can feel them. Very clear, you can feel them. That's why your mindfulness become very different. That mindfulness is better than the stethoscope. It can detect many things. That's why I know my body very well. When my body has problem, I know. But of course, not as good as the scientist. Yeah, the scientist got equipment, x-ray, everything to see. Then, like your brain, got tumor, no tumor, they can know. Then now they can slice it into don't know how many slices. They call it a CT scan or what. I also sometimes cannot remember the name, the technical name or words that they use. So through technology, the scientists can actually develop a lot of understanding of the physical body. That's the reason why they can even show it to you in a computer. Because they have all this data. Then you can see your own heartbeat. You can see your own artery, which one block, which one not block. Because I went through the angioplasty about 6 over years ago. 2013. Oh, 7 years already. So fast. 2013. Then the doctor, very good, that Dr. Wong, he showed me. He asked me to go in. Then I went in with my wife. Then he showed us and explained to me, out of the 3 major arteries that come out from the heart, all 3 are blocked. One of them almost 100%. The second one is 70%. The third one is okay, not serious, 30%. So he said 30% one, no need to do anything. But the 99% or 100% and the 70% one, you must clear it. Otherwise, it's a time bomb waiting to actually erupt. But luckily, because I meditate, because I have this nature within that alert me and allow me to understand, then I was able to actually pull through. In fact, if it's not because of my awareness and meditative capability, I would have kena heart attack many times. But because of my this ability, I was able to forewarn myself that nature forewarned me and told me 3 months before it happened. You said, it's about time you go and check your heart and your artery. Then I tell myself, nothing wrong, why you must check? Then inside there, the message come again. Is it, you remember? Your mother, that age, kena. Your elder brother, that age, also kena, 60. Then that time I was 59 plus, so coming to 60. Oh, okay, I say, when the sign come, I will go. Then 3 months later, exactly, the sign came. No? Yeah. But for me, I don't suffer. There is no such thing as all the signs of a heart attack that they name. I don't have sharp pains, profuse sweat, and many other type of symptoms. I don't have any. I just feel something eerie, associated with death if I don't take action. That's why when I felt that, I told my wife, call the ambulance. So I self-admit straight away. The ambulance came here, so surprised. Said, you boleh jalan ya? I say, boleh lah. You bukan sakit jantung? I say, ya lah. Patut sakit jantung. So when I reached the hospital, they immediately do the ECG. ECG. And they detected symptom of heart attack. They call it elevation. My heart did become like elevated. And just that moment when I went in. But the moment they jabbed me, I felt okay already. Then I asked them, after this, can I be discharged? The doctor looked at me. Do you know what happened to you or not? I said, I don't know. I felt something, but I thought it's not serious. But now I feel fine. I'm like normal back. He said, you had a heart attack just now. Huh? I had a heart attack. Is that a heart attack? Then he asked me, oh, do you have sharp pain? Do you sweat profusely? All negative. Then he said, you wait for the heart specialist to come to monitor me. Then they decide to admit me for 4 days, 3 nights. He said, we have to monitor you. Then after that, the result all negative. No more elevation. But he still want me to go through that session to make sure. Then after that, when they discharge me, they give me a lot of medication. They said, you have to try medication first. Then after that, you do your exercise. Then 6 weeks later, come back for stress test. Then my son heard, 6 weeks later, you must be mad. Heart attack cannot wait so long. So I told my son, never mind. We went and have a second opinion in the private sector, which we did. Then later on, we start to understand what is this. We call angioplasty. Mine, luckily, angioplasty still okay. Well, mine was not the complicated one. So I don't need to do a bypass. If you need to do a bypass, the risk is higher and it's more difficult to heal. With a bypass, they have to take your veins and all those things, or artery, to do the bypass. Then it takes a while to heal. And during that time, you are bedridden. But many people recover nowadays. The probability of a successful bypass is much higher nowadays than last time. But angio, the probability is very high. It's like very low percentage that has complication. Maybe 1% or less, if I'm not wrong. Because I heard it's very normal, success rate very high. According to a doctor that did on for me, that Dr. Wong, he said, so far, so good, he has done so many. None of them need emergency and all those things. So he is good and he is very confident. And finally, I came to know he's a Buddhist. And he was, one day before his operation on his client, he would take vegetarian Ehiwachanda Sattabhujanga Sutta. After the operation later on, only we become quite close. Then he talked to me about it. I saw this monk's photo, banner, it's a banner in his room, I think from the Achan Chah traditional. Then I saw that thing, then I asked him, are you a Buddhist? He said, yeah, I used to go. He used to go to Babsa. Oh, then I say, yeah, Bab, I went there before. I taught there before many years back. That's how we become friends after that. So he's a very good doctor, very nice doctor. He is in iHeal, I think, iHeal. And his machine is very good. The one that non-invasive, he checked me. The non-invasive one, the machine, it's very good because that machine, no reason, just the dye also very low percentage. Then they inject in, the accuracy is so high, you know, 99.9% of the actual angioplasty. When you do the angioplasty, means invasive, the wire went in. But the machine non-invasive, no wire, no reset all. You can just do, but you have to pay. It's not cheap. That time it cost me about 3,000 for that test alone. Now maybe cheaper or what, I don't know. So it's very accurate. So when he checked on me, he told me about the 99% or 100% blocks. And then when he do the actual angioplasty, the actual angiogram, oh sorry, the angiogram, then the actual procedure is the angioplasty. It come out exactly match. He told me same. He said, don't worry. He said, exactly as per the test that he did. Yeah. So that's how I came to understand all these things. So this one is extra non-dharma medical. I think Dr. Jayanta will understand. Okay, we move on. So I will maybe read again that paragraph. With the silent mind and pure awareness, one can be aware of all the vibration and phenomena within one's physical body and mind. One will be able to perceive deeper into one's mind consciousness. All phenomena can be perceived via the silent mind, and it can also witness how they come and go, arises and pass away, their birth and death, etc. Hence, realizing their impermanent universal characteristic and their empty nature or non-self nature universal characteristic. You will see them everywhere, from your bodily vibration to your heartbeat, your pulse of life, or the pulses within your physical body, the feelings, the thought activity, the perception and consciousness, physical, mental and nature's phenomena, etc. You only have to silence your mind to see them all as they are. You realize the word see, I inverted comma, in means not using your physical eye to see. But if it's specific phenomena, like you see a passing car, that one is, you have to make use of the seeing consciousness to see. But it's actually the awareness that is seeing. The awareness and that thing move as one. The perception hasn't come in yet. So when I talk about the seeing, means not with the physical eye. Sometimes the awareness is aware of your hearing consciousness. So that one doesn't involve the physical eye. Do you understand? That's why I put that C inverted comma. Not using the physical eye. Using the awareness, specific phenomenal awareness, and the spacious awareness without a center. You only have to silence your mind to see them all as they are. Means seeing truth, seeing the reality, seeing things as they are. What you perceive via your mundane mind or thinking mind is not a real condition, where they arise via the thought process, which is respond to memory. The reality of pure perception, which is before the knowing, is very different. That's why your awareness is deep. The pure perception before the knowing means before your aggregate of sanya really go in and perceive it. Means before the words, the labeling. So unless you have sati, very stable, you cannot understand what I say. But when you have sati, very stable, you will understand. There are quite a number of kayamita who has the ability who understand all this. Human being has the tendency to react to sense experience because of ignorant avijja. To solve human being's problem or suffering, one needs the Dhamma. Life without Dhamma is not easy to cope. Without the Dhamma, there will be delusion and ignorance with regards to the understanding of who you are and what you are. Without self-knowledge, one will grasp and cling onto the five aggregates of form and mind or the human being, hence conditioning one's suffering or misery. Because you attach, you cling, and you want things your way, which is not nature's way. That's how suffering comes to be. Without attachment, without craving, without clinging, there is no suffering. Suffering arises because of self-delusion. You believe this thing is real. You believe your physical body and mind, aggregates of mind, they are real. They belong to you. So all this is self-delusion, sakayadity. Then samsara or wheel of life within existence. This samsara word is a Pali word. Samsara means the birth and death, means existential world. Or sometimes they draw the wheel of birth and death, the wheel of life they call it. Samsara or the wheel of life within existence can also take the form of man and nature must harmonize. So this one is easier understanding. It is also used to explain feng shui. Feng shui. Feng is wind. Shui is water. Wind and water. So when it comes to feng shui, it's about nature and man, because they believe nature influences man. That's why man and nature, there must be harmony. So within nature, there are nature's law that governs nature, that governs life and existence. So when man and nature must harmonize, means the living being, the human being, must understand the nature's law that governs life and existence in order to understand life and live life. So that's how they are interconnected. So man and nature must harmonize. And there are the five universal order or law that governs nature. The five universal law or order, two of them are scientific law, Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama, which we have gone through. The physical law of nature, then the organic, biological order of nature. These two, the scientists have penetrated quite deeply. That's why they progress very fast. These are the scientific law. And the other three are spiritual law, law of karma or karma niyama, law of mind or citta niyama. Citta is maya. And finally, the law of truth or dhamma niyama. So dhamma is all the truth that the Buddha taught us. That's why his teaching is called Dhamma. He teaches us Dhamma, which is the truth. So Dhamma Niyama. When you have right understanding or right view with regards to this five universal order or nature's law, then it is like you understand the secret of life. Then you will understand life, thereby knowing how to live life. When you know how to live life, you will know how to experience all of the wonders and beauties of life. Then life will be very meaningful and beautiful. That is, you will realize what the Heart Sutta always said. True emptiness is wonderful existence. 真空妙有. The meaning is when you penetrated or awakened to the true emptiness, profound emptiness, then you can realize that wisdom and awakening, then it will give rise to the understanding that enable you to understand life so beautifully. That's why existence become wonderful, beautiful, meaningful. So true emptiness is wonderful existence. That is the meaning. 真空妙有. Understanding the three right views with regards to the law of karma, the Four Noble Truths, and the law of dependent origination or dwelling is very important, because it can transform your understanding of the Dhamma to enable you to live the noble life of an enlightened being. So here, Four Noble Truths means the essence of the Buddha's teaching, and they are called Noble Truths because when you understand them, you will awaken, you will become noble ones. That's the reason why it's called Noble Truth. Truth that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones. That's why they are very unique, beautiful truth. So the three right view, as we have gone through, the law of karma is karma niyama. Then the Four Noble Truths and the law of dependent origination or paticca samuppada, they are the other two right view. Four Noble Truths refers to Dhamma Niyama, means truth with regards to the Dhamma that the Buddha teach. There are a lot of Dhamma, essential Dhamma all over. But the most important one is the Four Noble Truths, the essence of the Buddha's teaching. But the moment you understand this truth, you have right view with regards to this truth, you will awaken, you will become noble one. And this one comes with the three turning, the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. Then the paticca samuppada or dwelling is about your mind. Citta niyama. When you want to understand how you function as a human being, how your mind functions, then you need to be very, very mindful, heedful, to see all this. Then you understand the dwelling teaching. Because this dwelling teaching describes to you how your mind functions, how you function as a human being, how dependent on something, something else arises. That's why everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. And our mind also behave that way. So the first tooling is avijja paccaya sankhara. So avijja paccaya sankhara means avijja is ignorant, dependent on ignorance, arises mental activity, sankhara, mind activity. Sui has opened up the chart. So this one is multi-dimensional. So avijja is ignorant, either conditioned mental activity or sankhara or thinking. Because when you have ignorance or delusion, you want to understand, you want to know. So one thing to know, you think. Yeah, that is the only instrument you have before you understand sati, before you develop the understanding of the silent mind, the true mind, the meditative mind, the self-nature. So avijja paccaya sankhara means dependent on ignorance, wanting to know, wanting to understand and experience, you think. So when you think, your mind make contact with your brain. That's how the first tooling will condition the dwelling to move. But at the moment of avijja paccaya sankhara, there is also contact. Because when you start to think, the thinking mind, the mundane mind, actually make contact with the brain. So when it make contact with the brain, what happened? Yeah, like the physics experiment, the light bulb light up in there. So that is the reason why the third link is vijnana, mental consciousness. So when you think, it make contact with the brain, then it trigger off that consciousness. The mental consciousness, that is the mental vijnanam. That is where the commentators, the commentary, they cannot explain it because they don't see in the meditation. They don't understand this. They use the three lifetime to explain, because they say dependent on ignorant, conditioned, karmic volition. Ah, that one easier to explain, karmic volition. So karmic volition is your karmic consciousness, understand or not? Then dependent on karmic volition, you condition the rebirth consciousness. So that vijnanam, they say, is rebirth consciousness. Then because of that rebirth consciousness, it conditioned namarupa, the five aggregate of form and mind, the birth of a living being or a human being. Then like that, very easy to explain. Then he said, because the human being or the living being arise already, dependent on that, there must be sense basis. Then because of sense basis, there is contact, pasat. So salayatana pacaya pasat. Then pasat, which is contact, will condition feeling. Feeling will condition craving. Craving will condition grasping. Then grasping condition becoming. Then you take birth. Means you are born into that. Means transgression. Then from birth, it arises the whole mess of suffering. But this paticca-samuppada doesn't flow this way. And it's multidimensional. For those who meditate, who have the sati and understanding, they will see this very clearly. Because if it's once over three lifespan, then what for the Buddha teach you? It only happened once over three lifetime. What I saw was every moment, every instant, instantaneous. So under the traditional Theravada teaching or commentaries explanation, they say the first life is because you have avijja, he said. Never mind. Because you have avijja. This one can highlight it. Oh.
You just circle.
Oh.
You will see the
never mind. You have avijja. So he said this is maybe, let's say, this life, avijja. Then it condition the karmic volition, means before you die, the karmic volition. Then this karmic volition will condition rebirth consciousness. So this is, instead of mental activity, they call it karmic volition. Then it condition, instead of mental consciousness, they call it rebirth consciousness. Then you are born into the next life, namarupa. This is the human being, or the living being. Okay? So this is your second life. Okay? Second life. Okay? So this is your first life. Then after that, he said, this will go on. Then finally, you take birth again. So this is your third life. You ask yourself, is there any meaning to learn this type of paticca-samuppada? To me, it's not useful. It cannot teach me anything. But the one I saw in my own meditation and awareness in daily life is different. I saw before the Dhamma understanding come in, there is self-delusion, ignorance. And one thing to know, one thing to experience, I created thinking. That's what I saw. And I knew this is thinking, sankara. And normally, how do you think? You go to your memory, your brain. That's why you make contact with your brain. And your brain is an organ. Do you understand? Then like the physics experiment, upon contact, what happened? Mental consciousness arise. So this number three is actually mental consciousness. So this one, mental consciousness, is the pure consciousness. Like the Buddha said, in the seeing, there's only the seeing consciousness. In the hearing, there's only the hearing consciousness. No one to see, no one to hear. It's without the self-delusion yet. Without the content of consciousness yet. Nothing has gone inside there yet. So what happened is, because of your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning in your brain, so this is the one that make you heedless, that give you a lot of wrong understanding without the right view. So what happened is, every moment of consciousness, when you think, when you see, when you hear, you smell, you take, you tactile feel or think, it will trigger off the content of consciousness based on your views, opinion, and conditioning. It went into this dhyana. So after it go in, it become nama rupa, the five aggregate of form and mind. And this is the second aspect of the five aggregate. The external form with its views and conditioning all went in. That's how that five aggregate of form and mind, the second aspect, the mental consciousness, or we call it the thought, arise. And that is number four. So according to the Buddha, dependent on that namarupa, there must be salayatana, otherwise it cannot arise. It must be through one of your senses, sense basis. That's why dependent on this second aspect of your five aggregate of form and mind, for it to arise, there must be sense basis. That's how the link flow. And then dependent on the sense basis, it trigger contact. Then contact condition feeling, feeling condition craving, craving condition upadana, which is grasping, then becoming, then birth, then arise the whole mess of suffering. But you have to look at the other dimension. The first dueling, there is ignorant contact. This particular movement shows avijja also make contact. Because without contact, you cannot think. The moment you think, there is contact. So during this contact, there is avijja. So ignorant contact will condition the particular input of content or consciousness. That's why the content of consciousness will have all the evil roots, the wrong view, and all those negativity of mind state. That's why under Abhidhamma, they teach you kusala and akusala, and the various type of consciousness that can manifest without the evil roots and with the evil roots, and wholesome, unwholesome, and all those things. So during this point, ignorant contact can also trigger feeling. Then this feeling will be conditioned into craving, where you lack wisdom. That's the reason why without yoniso manasikara, you cannot handle contact. Straight away, ignorant contact will condition craving. You cannot cut a feeling. To cut here is impossible unless you have wisdom. Without wisdom, you cannot cut. So this is how the link flow. So by now, hopefully, it will be clearer, easier for you all to understand. Okay, so we go back to the other one. You have to clean it off.
It's okay, I can just don't
say. Okay. Okay, so now we are at
12
link. Okay, so I have explained the dependent origination. So all these three right view with regards to Kamaniyama, Chittaniyama, and Dhammaniyama are very important, because it can transform your understanding of the Dhamma to enable you to live the noble life of enlightened being. Then thought is limited and egoic, hence it cannot free you. True mind is only pure awareness without the content of consciousness, means without thought. As such, it can see things as they are without the conditioning. One will come to understand clearly that in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. That is, before the knowing and before the delusion or sakyadity carry through to condition you into grasping and clinging onto what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. Your craving or reactive mental intention is due to your habitual tendency born of wrong view. So all these are very clear. Then I have to explain a bit why thought is limited and egoic. For those who are new, you better listen carefully. This one I have explained many times. Why is thought limited and egoic? Our nature, our true mind, is pure awareness, spacious awareness without a center, or we call it the oneness nature. That's why that one is not limited. That one is the whole, complete, the oneness. But how do we create thought? You have lived life for so many years, since birth until now, you have been creating countless thoughts. Do you know how you create thoughts? You have to see in the meditation how you create thought, how you input the content of consciousness. Initially, it's just spacious awareness. But the moment the mundane mind come out, you know what happened? The mundane mind will focus. Where it try to know thing, perceive thing. So take for example, the painting on the wall, or that chair that you are trying to see, or the Buddha image at the back that you are trying to perceive. So what happened? From your spacious awareness, which is your true mind, you suddenly shrink your awareness to that limited space, understand not? Where you perceive that external form, the image, or the painting, or that so-called chair. So this one becomes shrink. That's how it becomes limited. And the reason why it is limited is because from the spacious awareness, it has shrunk and become so small. And within that limited space, you input your content of consciousness, which is from your views, opinion, and conditioning, where you act according to memory. You don't have the wisdom to act yet. Not until you have the initial wisdom. Yonisomanasika. You can't act that way. That's why I always share with you, acting according to memory is not acting at all. Yeah, that one is with delusion. Sakayaditi. That's why once the delusion set in Sakayaditi, it make it egoic. You think that one is real. You think that one is you. You see, you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactile feel and think. That's how the egoic mind went in. That's why thought is always limited and egoic. Unless you have the wisdom. When you have the wisdom, you don't act according to memory. You don't act according to your views, opinion, belief system, and conditioning. You act according to wisdom, understanding, following Noble Eightfold Path. So when you act in that way, it is not only without self-delusion. That action is pure action. True action without the evil roots. That's why there is right thought, pure thought. Only enlightened being can arise that thought, that type of thought. If you are non-enlightened, chances is it may be relatively moral, the thought, moral, but it's not a pure thought. Why? Because egoic, sakyaditi. There is a self behind the action. So because of the egoic mind, born of sakyaditi, it tend to believe he is real, he exists. And because of that, there is selfishness, there is craving, there is desire, there is emotional negativity, that's why greed and hatred they arise. Then there is also this delusion that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. That's how the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion arise. Because thought, basically, before you are enlightened, is limited and egoic. So that's how you have to understand it. And the most important way to understand it is to realize it in the meditation, to see them clearly. Then you will understand, before you have the wisdom, the Dhamma understanding, how you act. You act deludedly, foolishly, heedlessly. But the moment you have the Dhamma understanding, you transform, you become heedful, you act with understanding. You act heedfully. Heedfully means you are ever mindful, constantly meditating. That's why you cannot make mistakes. You got no more wrong view. That's how you transform and become beautiful, become noble one, enlightened one. So this part is very useful. Eh? I hope you all can develop the understanding. Okay, we move on to the next section, 1.2. Understanding thought and consciousness. This one is a continuation. Once we input the content of consciousness into our pure awareness, then this consciousness becomes the thought. So what is thought? Thought is the pure consciousness plus its content. And what is its content? Sankara, inclusive of Vedana and Sanya. Okay? So the whole content of consciousness is everything that your mind can do, which is Sankara. So initially, before the knowing or the arising of thought, there is just this spacious awareness. The moment you focus on something, you input the content of consciousness, then consciousness becomes restricted or limited and become a thought. Take for example, seeing. Initially in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. But the moment you are preoccupied with what you see, and without the wisdom or yonisomanasikara at the moment of sense experience, then the egoic mind, born of sakkayadity or wrong view with regards to the atta or the self, has already arisen, causing you to grasp and cling onto what you see. Then your habitual tendency of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience will arise to condition your mental hindrance of mind to arise. Hence, the suffering. So all these are so clearly explained. Yeah? Then the last paragraph is something that I have already explained before. As form, external form, physical form, is a product of thought. Hence thought can see form. Yeah? This one I have explained before. But form cannot see thought because thought has higher intelligence than form. Likewise, since thought is the product of awareness or our pure nature, self-nature, hence awareness can see thought or can be aware of thought, but thought cannot see awareness, where awareness has higher intelligence than thought, which is limited and egoic before you are enlightened. So all this will be very clear. So we move on to 1.3. Important inquiries for developing the meditative wisdom. This one is a pointer for you to understand deeper and more. This is how last time when I meditate, I inquire myself. Oh. Then I contemplate, reflect, then I meditate and awaken. That's how I understand that the five aggregates of form and mind are not real, empty. Dependent originating condition arising, not a permanent and changing entity. Because I investigated into them. Then I even inquire after that. If they are not me, then why do they arise in me? Well, I reflected, contemplate, and within the meditation I saw clearly. They arise and pass away, and yet I didn't die. Feeling come and go, I didn't die. Perception come and go, I didn't die. That's why that part is not in the teaching. That part, my nature realized myself. Since they arise and pass away, and I didn't die, which means, how can feeling be me? How can perception be me? How can all the mental state, sankara activity, mental intention be me? Then how can consciousness be me? They come and they go. I am still around. I didn't die. If they are not me, the question is, why do they arise in me? Then who am I? What am I? That's how I inquire, penetrated. Then when I silence my mind, I understand everything. Where all this, the aggregates of mind, they are dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. not a permanent and changing entity. Nothing to do with you. It is non-self. There is something. It's not nothingness. It's not no self. It's non-self. Non-self means not a permanent and changing entity, but there is something which we can call the human being, the living being, the form and mind. That's why the real Dhamma understanding is very different, very penetrating. It's not just anatta, non-self. Oh, not me. No. So much more than that, deeper. Not you. But then, how did it arise? Why did it arise in you if it's not you? Then who are you? What are you? That's how you finally trace back in the meditation when you silence your mind. You realize there is a nature that is beyond thought, beyond mind. And the awareness nature is the beginning of the arising from that nature. The first thing to come out is that pure awareness, the awareness nature. Yeah. But when you realize Nibbana, even that one also ceases. That's how it returns to the source. But that nature, when it come out to the existential world, when it's connected to the form and mind, is always the pure awareness nature, the self nature. From there, everything comes to be. But when you develop the wisdom and understanding, when you realize Nibbana, when the form and mind cease, that pure awareness also cease. Otherwise, you cannot realize the unconditioned. You cannot realize the real cessation, Nibbana. So all these are very beautiful. So I will read to you 1.3. Yeah? Hopefully by now you can understand. Important inquiry for developing the meditative wisdom. Are the feeling you, perception you, sankhara activity you, all of the mental states, mental intention, mental formation and all those things, everything that your mind can do. And finally, consciousness that arise in you. Are they really you or what you are? If you are mindful, you are aware, you can see. Pleasant feeling arise, cease. You didn't die. So how can it be you? If feeling is you, it should die with it then. Similarly, perception, sankhara, mind state, mental activity, and consciousness. They come and they go, and yet you're still around. You didn't die. So how can they be you? If they are you, you should die with it. When it ceases, you should die. If they are not you, then who are you? What are you? Yeah. The second inquiry is, if they are not you, then why did they arise in you? How did they arise in you? That's why you have to meditate to understand all this. If feeling and perception, etc., are you, then when they arise and pass away, how come you did not die? So who are you? What are you? If the five aggregates of form and mind are not you, then why did they arise in you? These are the inquiry I went deep into on my own. Nobody taught me. My teacher also don't understand all this. That's how I developed the understanding, and now I share it because there is condition. Okay, we move on to part 2. Definition of term. Profound prajna used by Master Xuan Hua. The meaning is wonderful wisdom. Your prajna is wisdom. Profound is wonderful. Wonderful wisdom of those who cultivated the Bodhisattva way to become Sammasambuddha. So their wisdom is called profound wisdom. The very, very penetrative one. Very profound. There's superficial prajna. This is the equivalent to the three types of wisdom. First turning, second turning, and third turning. Now you will see the similarity. The Mahayana use the word superficial prajna. Means not profound prajna. So this is limited to the understanding of the Four Noble Truths and the dwelling of condition causation as taught by the Theravada. So this superficial wisdom means it is not the profound wisdom. So once you awaken to the Four Noble Truths and its three turning, they call it the sound hearer or the Jacob Buddhas. Then the other one is awakened to the dwelling on their own without the sasana. So all these are, we call it the sainthood way. The sainthood way. So the four Aryan sainthood, Sotapan, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahantship. Then there is another one which they call it the silent Buddha, Pacheka Buddha, the silent Buddha. But a lot of book interpret it wrongly. They say the silent Buddha cannot teach. No, they can teach. Pacheka Buddha can teach. The only difference is they don't have the perfection, they don't have a sasana, understand? Even the Arya, they can teach. The Sotapan, the Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahan, they can teach. But limited, their understanding is limited. Limited to the Four Noble Truths. Limited to the dwelling. They really, really penetrated the Dhamma. And no more rebirth of the segmented life after they die, if they reach Arahantship. If they don't reach Arahantship, depending on which stage of sainthood, then maximum 7 birth, they will become Arahant. That's why some, they call it the first stage of sainthood, maximum 7 birth. Then once you become Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, you are called a once returner. You will only return to the conditioned world, the sanctuary. They call it the Kamaloka, once, only one more time before you become Arahant. Then if you become an Anagami, you don't return. You don't come to our existential world, Kamaloka. You will straight away take rebirth in the pure airport, the Brahmarang. That's why they are called non-returner. They don't return to the sanctuary. So these three type of noble ones, they are actually already very beautiful and very unique too. And with that understanding, you no need to actually worry. Because the moment you can become a Sotapan, you are already assured of Arahantship. But like I say, that form of mind is not you. That one is just a segmented life. That's the reason why a lot of cultivators, I realize, they are so obsessed with enlightenment. They say, you meditate for what? To become enlightened. Then when you start to tell them, when you develop the understanding, then you realize, hey no you, hey no me, no one enlightened. Then the question they ask is, then meditate for what? They cannot understand. That's the reason why the profound understanding of the unconditioned and the conditioned that will enable you to understand the form and mind is very important. Because this one is karmically conditioned out, the vehicle and tool, not you. This one can come and live life, and it has its own set of law, reality. And this is subject to karma. That's where the complication is. But this one is non-self, empty. Not you, not what you think. So without the complete realization of the unconditioned, you cannot understand the beauty of the form and mind. You cannot appreciate the cultivation. Then you use your mundane thinking mind to reason. And that mundane thinking mind is limited, egoic. That's why it's selfish. You know how it reasons. No one to be enlightened. I don't want to. But then don't cultivate. Do what you like in life. Because they lack this type of understanding. That's why they have a lot of fear. you want to go the Bodhisattva way. In the early years, a lot of this type of so-called inverted comma Buddhists, they will come and panic other people. You dare to take the Bodhisattva vow? You think easy? Sainthood also cannot. Then they create all this unnecessary coming obstruction. And because of what they say, it comes from the egoic mind that is deluded without the understanding. They didn't inquire, who are you? What are you? Then what have you got to lose when you go this way? They cannot understand. Where they attach to the form and mind. Through that Sakaya deity, they actually block themselves, create their own coming obstruction. Not only they dare not go, they go and panic people and influence people not to go. So a lot of these things can happen. So the purpose of this sharing is to let the cultivator understand. Before you have the understanding, please have an open mind. Don't simply say things and comment. Otherwise, you will create a lot of coming obstruction that it will prevent you from receiving this higher teaching. Then profound prajna will be beyond your reach. So always remember, superficial prajna is relatively easy to realize. But when I use the word relatively easy, it's also not easy. If you are deluded, there is no way. You have to have the understanding. When you understand, it's very easy, like I always say. Before you understand, it's hella difficult. Now you all can understand, I believe. Because thought-based meditation, now you can laugh at it. Right? Those who do thought-based meditation, we are limited by the instrument of thought. So if you cannot break free from thought-based meditation, do you think you stand any chance to become an Aryana, a first stage of sainthood, or second stage, or third stage, or even Arahantship? You don't stand a chance at all. But you don't know what is heedfulness. You don't understand the Buddha's teaching, Dhammapada verse 21, day 2, day 3, especially verse 21. Heedlessness is the path to the deathless. The heedless are as if dead. That statement by the Buddha itself tells you clearly, if you do thought-based meditation, you are heedless. You are as if dead. You don't stand a chance at all. That's the reason why I say, when you cannot understand that, it is very difficult. So although I say superficial prajna is relatively easy, easy for those who understand, is very easy. As compared to the Bodhisattva way, the profound prajna that take eons and eons and eons of perfection. That one is rewarding, difficult, take a long time, but really rewarding, very beautiful. And when you understand, you will really count your good blessing, good karma, to have the condition to go this way, because it's so wonderful. Life is so meaningful, beautiful. And every segmented life of coming is so meaningful, so beautiful. Like I used to say, you come to suffer and become miserable and to pay back karma, then better don't come. But they got no choice. They have to come. Well, karma conditioned them to come. That's why they have to come. But if you go the Bodhisattva way, you choose to come. You are so different. You choose the timing, the condition behind, and the civilization, everything. That's why you can plan. You can invoke power of merits. You can invoke all the adhittana, the aspiration, the vow, and all those things. Then with your understanding, your wisdom, your virtue, they will really help you. And they will really protect you. They will make your way so much easier, so much meaningful, more meaningful and beautiful. You look at the yellow card, the Bodhisattva vow. I mentioned them all. All those right view, right understanding, and aspiration, miscellaneous vow, additional vow. They are very useful. They are very beautiful. So go through them. Develop the Saddha Virya, then aspire strongly. Initially, stage one of Bodhi mind development to go the Buddhist way is very easy. You only need to determine strongly with the faith, the sincerity, and to persevere, to plant the seed of Bodhi, to arise the Bodhi mind. So the Bodhi mind to go this way, to take the Bodhisattva way, to cultivate sincerely, to fulfill the four basic vow of a Bodhisattva. And these are the causes and conditions that can give rise to this way. Then you invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for this way to be established. That's why the profound Bodhi mind is very important. You plant that. Even before you can be on the path, you should plant it. You should take the Bodhisattva vow. Even before your ability to become Arahant or whatever. But the moment you take that vow, you become different. Then you will realize the sainthood way. You will glimpse through them very fast. Then by the time you realize Arahant shape, you will know how to invoke the vow, everything. It's already there, established for you. Otherwise, most of the Arahant that didn't have all this, when they realize Arahant shape, some of them couldn't make it because they don't have the parami to go that way. That they haven't really been taught about that way, that teaching. But most of these people are because of their roots, their karmic roots. They are contented with the sinful way. So for them, they say, "Nah, no more suffering." Actually, no more suffering in the sense that no more form and mind to come back. Because after you die that segmented life as an Arahant, there is really no more ignorance, no more avijja. So no more avijja, you will not condition rebirth consciousness. And because you don't condition rebirth consciousness, nature's law, you still have your karmic nature, but it cannot come back. Because there is no more mind to come back. But for the Bodhisattva, it's different. They still have the mind. They have the Bodhi mind, the pure mind. And because of the vow, out of love and compassion, that pure mind, they actually make the vow to help take across all living beings throughout the entire existence. So that first vow, out of love and compassion, is very powerful to liberate the countless, limitless living beings, to take them all across. So that one becomes a nature's law. And that one becomes the karmic condition for the pure mind to take birth. So the rebirth consciousness of a Bodhisattva is without avijja. It's a pure mind, born of love and compassion and the vow. It will condition to the karmic nature and it will come. Then, like the normal rebirth that the normal people take, except this one is without ignorance. That's why when I was young, I can recall my mind very pure. I got nothing inside there. And it's very different. Like Hui Ning, he was born without the mundane mind. His coming is so different. That's why as a Bodhisattva, when they arise, they are different. They are not ordinary beings. But before they connect, they are like you and me, no different. Like Sakyamuni, before the age of 35, underneath the Bodhi tree, he was just like an ordinary human being. That's why he is still subject to old age, sickness, and death. He still have to go through the self-mortification, the suffering, and all those things. And he has to endure many things. So it depends on your karmic nature, your spiritual nature, your understanding, and how you plan your life. So all this you will come to understand when you take that way later on. Eh? Okay, we move on. We have to finish already. Mm. Yes, already 10:20. Eh? I think we are towards the end already.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Okay. We will go to the last part. Eh?
Definition.
Oh, okay. Okay, form Dhamma, perceptible Dhamma at the form level, the first of the five aggregates of form and mind. Then mind Dhamma, non-perceptible, there is non-tangible Dhamma, the remaining four aggregates of mind, namely feeling, perception, activity of mind and consciousness. Then need awareness or mindfulness to see the mind Dhamma. So this one is obvious, without awareness you cannot see. Without mindfulness, you cannot see. If one cannot see form Dhamma, then it's very difficult for them to see mind Dhamma, which is much more subtle and much less perceptible. Cultivators of prajna, superficial prajna, can end the birth and death of their delimited, segmented life. Means that particular segment. But they are unable to transcend the birth and death of fluctuation of thought. Fluctuation of thought means when they are alive as an arahant, the birth and death of the thought is still there. Their mundane mind has not collapsed. That's why there is just this wisdom that allow them to free. But the birth and death of fluctuation means the thought, they still cannot cease it. That's why the Mahayana, you cannot blame them. They always say the arahant, their nirvana is not the real one. But actually it's not correct, it's the real one. It's like you lower with fluctuation. He said the realization of enlightenment is with fluctuation. They can be enlightened because they don't have ignorance. So at the moment of death, there is no more rebirth consciousness. But their mundane mind is still there when they are still in the midst of living life. So previous life can be animal, peta, devas, or demons, etc. Then this life, let's say you are a human being. So which one of this is you? None of them, isn't it? Because what I'm trying to explain is birth and death has occurred over a long period of time for us, like maybe aeons and aeons of birth and death. So every segmented life we come, we are born into a different rhyme. And which one is you? None of them are you. That's why the beauty of the teaching is anatta, non-self, not you, not what you think. All these are your past birth. But none of them is real, none of them is you. They are all dependent, originating, segmented, right? Condition arising, cause of no. Okay, I think we stop there. The part 3, we keep it for next lesson, because already late. Okay, we shall end. Then you can have your Q&A, meditation reporting. I think today is Dhamma session, more of Q&A. Okay, anybody who wants to ask any question or report meditation, you can just wave your hand or come in. Anybody? We have another 7 minutes only, before 10:30. Everybody so shy, so quiet. Anybody? Everything understood? So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. One last chance. Any question or any reporting? Otherwise, we will end. Huh? We will go for sharing our merits. Okay. Says nobody. Okay. We will do the sharing of merits, transfer merits, then maybe we invoke blessing for the nation, then you make your aspiration. Akasata Chirbumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana Itawata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhiya Idang Menya Tidang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang Menya Tidang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang Menya Tidang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Devo Asatu Kalena Sasu sampati heto cha Vito bhavatu loko cha Raja bhavatu dhammiko Imina punyang kamina Mame bala samagamo Sattang samagamo hotu Yava nivana patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, you can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, and all the great beings, the worthy ones. Then we end. Thank you.